Shabbat Shalom. Today I want to talk about exercising power through godly submission. God is a God of order. He brings what? Order out of chaos. It's part of who He is. He expects all of His children to honor and respect authority. We've addressed this in past teachings. All authority, even pagan authority, comes from God. The story of Esther gives us a paradigm of how to relate to secular authorities as well as address abuses of power. We learn from Esther that God gives us authority and power to use for the benefit of the oppressed and persecuted. How we exercise power is as important as the power itself. So let's take a dive into the story of Esther and explore how to use authority and power on behalf of those who have none. This is the principle called interposition. Most refer to it as standing in the gap. That's kind of the layman's term for that. Standing in the gap for someone else who is unable to due to a lack of power and authority. We see this concept of interposition throughout the scriptures. It's embedded in most of the stories. It is the right and just way to address corrupt powers and corrupt authorities. This is super relevant for us in 2024, living in the nation that we live in, right? With all the corruption coming from our leadership and our institutions. So this becomes critical for us to understand as we move forward into this year. Let me start with a definition of interposition so that we're on the same page as I use this term in today's teaching. Interposition, it's the act of a lower power intervening between a greater power and the people. So when a middle manager kind of gets in between the employer and the maybe the people that are under the manager, it's a lower power interceding on behalf of the people to the ultimate power. That's interposition. We see that with Moses and Pharaoh. Moses was a leader of his people, and he stood as a leader and interposed between them and Pharaoh, right? We see this with Mattathias Maccabee as he stands in the gap for his people against abuses of authority in this pagan context that he found himself in. We see this in the beginning of our nation, our colony leaders, and George Washington, who interposed between us and the abusive British monarchy. We see this in Martin Luther King Jr. as he steps up to stand in the gap between his people and the abuses of authority against them in his day. It's all around us. It's the proper way to address grievances. The world doesn't do it this way, though, does it? The world is just crazy and violent. We saw that in the Summer of Love. We saw that with the BLM movement. It was certainly the world's way of trying to address problems. That's not how we do things in the kingdom. That's not what we're called to do when we stand up against abusive powers. Now, it also relates to states. We'll see this as we go further into 2024. Interposition is the action of a state whereby its sovereignty is placed between its citizens and the federal government. The governor of Texas has been defying the Biden administration by interposing on behalf of Texans to stop the illegal invasion of our southern border. That's interposition. What the governor of Texas is doing is called interposition. We really haven't seen this on this level since the Civil War. Actually, since the Revolution, but the Civil War is a little bit different. But so we're seeing these things right now taking place in our nation. Now, one of the most powerful stories of interposition in the Bible is the story of Esther. It's Purim. Purim begins tonight. We're a little bit behind the curve. We're always so focused on Passover because there's so much work that Purim doesn't get a lot of attention. But it's a significant story. It has so many lessons for us today. So what I want to do is jump in the middle of this story, because you know the story, and I just want to jump into the middle of it and address some of these lessons related to interposition so that we can better understand what that looks like as we see it already happening in our country. And as we're called as believers to interpose on the behalf of those who have no power, who are weak and vulnerable, and are in places of abuse. So, the story of Esther. She goes from an orphaned Jewish exile in Persia to becoming the queen, second in power and authority to the king himself. She uses her power, or how she uses her power, is a great example of how we are to use our power and authority today. Every one of us has a measure of power and authority. We have that, to a different degree maybe, but we all have it. And in Messiah, we have ultimate authority and ultimate power to represent him and his kingdom, to do his work on earth as it is in heaven. The question is how do we use that authority and power? See, that is the deal breaker. We have to use that appropriately or we'll lose it. So Esther gives us that example of how to use power and authority in a way that's godly, in a way that has integrity. So be sure to read the story of Purim tonight as Purim begins at sunset. Read it to your children. Discuss it with them around the table. Help them to get into the rhythm of the festivals, right? Purim's a great time to jump in. Watch the Esther movie, right? One Night with the King, 2006. It's the blockbuster of all the Esther movies. So, but watch an Esther movie. Be inspired. Look for how Mordecai and Esther interpose on behalf of their oppressed people. Let's jump into the story where Esther has already become queen of Persia. And the corrupt prime minister, Haman, has manipulated the king into legislating the genocide of the Jewish people. So we begin with Mordecai, Esther's uncle, who adopted her as a little girl shortly after the tragic deaths of her parents. Esther chapter 4. When Mordecai learned all that had been done, speaking of the plan of the prime minister to legislate the genocide of his people, when he had learned of all of that, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the midst of the city and wailed loudly and bitterly. He went as far as the king's gate, for no one was to enter the king's gate clothed in sackcloth. He didn't run out, start shooting up the city. He didn't get a band of people and start burning down the businesses. He wasn't running around intimidating people, right? What does he do? What's his first act? What does Mordecai do when faced with this tremendous overreach of the government? It says that he went out and humbled himself, put on sackcloth and ashes. This is the Jewish way of getting God's attention in the midst of a crisis, of crying out, saying, God, have mercy on us. We are but dust and ashes, right? But we're in trouble and we seek your face. This was his first reaction and his first response. He's careful not to get too close to the palace because that would have violated the laws. He works within the framework of laws. As long as the laws are just, he works within that framework. People, the first lesson is prayer is always the first response. In any crisis, any challenge, anything that we're confronted with, we should be turning to the Lord in prayer first and foremost. That's the first thing we have to learn, school ourselves into doing. Verse 3, in each and every province where the command and decree of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and many lay on sackcloth and ashes. What Mordecai did is he started interceding. And then the word got out. And then he organized groups of people doing what he did. And this momentum of intercessors began to multiply everywhere. And that was the beginning of the fall of Haman. If we want to pinpoint what's going to be the beginning of his fall, it's Mordecai interceding and organizing intercession on behalf of his people. This is where it all begins. Info commercial. Our intercession every week is from 8:30 to 9. There's a few of us that attend. We need more. Calling on intercessors. And please, I'll tell you, you know who comes when we call, make a call for intercession? Moms who have so many responsibilities with their young kids. Moms, I do not want to lay that on you. I am not going to put a guilt trip on you to come. Dads with small kids, not a guilt trip on you. But there's a number of us that are single, that have extra time. Come, join us. We are stirring up the heavens with so many groups around the United States who are interceding on behalf of our nation, behalf of our world. So come and join us in this movement of intercession. We pray every week, Saturday morning, 8:30 to 9. Pastor Donna leads our intercession, so come down and join us. That's my commercial. Okay, so verse 4, then Esther's maidens and her eunuchs came and told her, and the queen writhed in great anguish. She sent garments to clothe Mordecai that he might remove his sackcloth from him, but he did not accept them. Then Esther summoned Hathach from the king's eunuchs, whom the king had appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. So Hathach went out to Mordecai to the city square in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. State-sponsored terrorism. It's not the first time that it happened. It's not the last time either. I mean, look at October 7th and what's already taking place now, presently. It's shocking. But it has been here before and will come again. But the Lord will deal with it over and over and over as he rescues his people. He's so faithful. Okay, so Mordecai had told him all that had happened, yada, yada, yada. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict, which had been issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show Esther and inform her. Mordecai got informed. Mordecai did some digging and some fact-checking. Mordecai got hold of some documents. He got everything together. He's an organizer. He is a what? A community organizer. And he's going to raise up a resistance to what's going on. And now he's informing very important people, key people. The most key person, his own daughter, Esther the queen. He gives her all that information. We need to learn how to use our influence to help each other, to help those in need. We need to be the fact finders. We need to make sure we have our information correct and accurate as we organize to make a difference in our world today. Verse 7 goes on to say, not only to inform her, but to order her to go to the king to implore his favor and to plead with him for her people. To order her. He's going to order the queen to do something. You don't order queens to do things, right? By what authority can he order the queen, right? What is he thinking? By what authority can he order Esther? She's not even under his household anymore. She's married to the king of Persia. By what authority? I'm going to say it. You might disagree with me, but it won't be the first time or the last time, right? Heck, I disagree with myself sometimes. So it is what it is. I believe he had parental authority to order her. He pulled out his parental rights card. It didn't matter that she left home. It doesn't matter. He's going to use that. He watched over her. He adopted her. He raised her. And now she's in a position where she can save their people. And so he orders her to go and interpose before the king on behalf of the Jewish people. This is amazing. Verse 9. Hathach came back and related Mordecai's words to Esther. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and ordered him to reply to Mordecai. A lot of people ordering people around, huh? That's authority, and that's the proper use of authority. There's nothing wrong with authority when used properly. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that for any man or woman who comes to the king, to the inner court, who is not summoned, he has but one law, that he be put to death, unless the king holds out to him the golden scepter, so that he may live. And I have not been summoned to come to the king for 30 days. They related all of this to Mordecai. So she's saying, hey, I don't think I can go in. You know, there's been some type of breakdown, and I haven't seen the king for 30 days. So for me to just go traipsing into the inner court, it's probably going to cost my life. Do you realize what you're ordering me to do? Verse 13, then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, do not imagine that you and the king's palace can escape any more than all the Jews. Mordecai basically one-ups it. He says, Esther, you think you might die? Let me tell you, you are gonna die. You're Jewish. Once the word is out that you're Jewish, you too will die by the king's decree. Not even the king can change his own decree. That's what we learn in the story. For if you remain silent, verse 14, if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. Esther, God is the Most High God. Our God is the Most High God. He's sovereign over this. If you remain silent, he'll raise up someone else. This is the first instance where he's hinting to her the idea of providence, that there's no way she could end up being the queen without God pulling the strings. Esther, you're in this place for a reason. If you miss your cue, you're going to die, either by the king's decree or God himself, because you've brought the curse of your own destruction on your own household. And God is going to save his people. He'll just raise up someone else, Esther. He'll just use someone else. You're the chosen one. Neglect that. He'll choose another. It's so easy to remain silent when there's threats against us. It's so easy to keep our peace when we might lose a job or a promotion. Pressure on us from every angle. And we just want to isolate or retreat or just remain silent. We want to fly below the radar. The story of Esther is this. There's no flying below the radar. God's involved. You're called. I'm called. We're to speak up and speak out. We are the people of God. We're the voice of God. Without it, the nation will perish. Verse 14, and who knows, Esther, whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this. That's such an amazing idea. What I want to communicate is that God doesn't just move through a queen in an empire once every couple generations. God's on the move every day. And he's moving through his people. And all of us are like Mordecai's and Esther's. All of us have a measure of authority and influence and power, right? And God's counting on you and me for such a time as this to take a stand and help those who are oppressed and persecuted, to interpose between them and maybe authorities that are abusive. Before I took this pastorate, I worked as a blue-collar worker for 20 years in retail business. And I was a union steward in our store. My job was to interpose on behalf of the employees when they get in trouble with the employer. The employer has all kinds of rights to run his business, but he has to do that within the agreement that he's already made with the workers. And so many, many times, like you see in almost every sphere, powers can become abusive, manipulative in how they run their businesses. And so I was a union steward. And my job was just to make sure that things were done with integrity. And so when employees were in trouble, they could ask for the union steward to sit with them as they discussed and tried to resolve whatever the matter was with the employer. Most often, though, they would not ask because the manager would look down on that and would in a way that was just kind of like coy, suggest that they might be punished for that. So I had to have my antennas up all the time. I had to be proactive in that. I remember one time at our store, I'll just make up the gal's name. We'll call her Sally. So someone came and said, Sally's in trouble. They got her in the manager's office right now. I don't know what's going to happen. She could lose her job, you know. I said, thank you. So I went up there, knocked on the manager's door and opened it up, and he's sitting there all surprised. I said, oh, excuse me, sorry. And I went to shut the door, and I go, oh, Sally. Hey, Sally, how you doing? She goes, okay. I said, are you in a meeting? Yep. Do you want me to sit in here with you? Yeah, I would like that. The manager says, no, Mark, you can't. You can't just come in and sit in here. I said, no, I think I'm just going to sit here, and I'm going to be basically in the role of union steward on her behalf. So I sat in that meeting, and it didn't go well for him because he was out of protocol and was pulling some stunts and just intimidating her. So in the meeting, halfway through, he finally slammed his fist on the tables and told me, shut up and get out of my office now. He said, Mr. McClellan, get out now. So I just leaned over a little bit, and I said, I'm not leaving. If you want to leave, you can leave, but I'm not leaving. He said, if you don't leave, you'll be fired. I said, you can't fire me. And if you try to make me to leave, we'll file federal charges against you. And I think the only one that's going to be in trouble after this meeting is going to be you. In the role of an interposer, I had the authority that he had. We were equals in that role, and he could not get away with what he was trying to get away with. And I can tell you today that she probably would have lost her job had she not had someone in there saying, look, that's going too far. You're too hard, and she should not lose her job over this. I don't know how many times we have within our power the ability to help those around us. And God is counting on us to help those that are weak and powerless around us to interpose on their behalf. And so we can all do that. We see that all the time. We see that in homes, right? Think of your home setting. Think about when you're in trouble and dad's like not in a good mood. Who do you go to? You go to the lesser authority. Not lesser in value, just less in authority. You go to mom and you say, mom, I'm in trouble and this is what I did. And mom goes to work. She starts to interpose for you, right? On your behalf, trying to talk dad down a little bit and trying to renegotiate whatever that discipline's going to be, right? We see that on those levels. So whatever context you find yourself in, whatever influence and authority you have, use it for the glory of God. speak up, speak out on the issues that are important today. Let me go on with this story. Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go assemble all the Jews who are found in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days or a night. I and my maidens will also fast in the same way. And thus I will go into the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish." This is the greatness of Esther. This is the greatness of her realizing the sovereignty of God and the call of God, and that life is more than what we think it is. And in that moment of that calling on her life to take a stand for her people, she found her footing, and she stood up and said, "Tell Mordecai, game on. And if I die, I die. But I am going to do what's right. I'm going to use my power. I'm going to use my authority. I'm going to speak up and I'm going to speak out, and we'll let the chips fall where they may." God is looking for Mordecais and Esthers today. Interposition is risky. It will cost you dearly. But if God is using you, fear not. You and I will be invincible. If God is orchestrating it, fear not, He is with you. Enjoy the ride of providence as you take a stand, as you speak out, as you represent Him on behalf of those around you. That's one of the big lessons and takeaways from the story of Esther. I'm out of time, so we're going to pick this up next week. Next week. Wow. So I didn't really get down to any application, so I'll just finish with this. We're going to go have a great meal together, celebrate our season of Purim, and then we'll pick this up next week. Just want to say God bless His people, Israel, and God bless the USA, and God bless Texas, who is currently in the front of the starting lane to interpose against godless, lawless tyranny in our current administration. Stay tuned. Shabbat shalom.